This is KOWSLP, Occidental 92.5 FM, serving Santa Rosa and West Sonoma County for 18 years. Streaming to the world at kosfm.com from our studios in Santa Rosa. You can visit our website to listen, donate, or volunteer. You can also download the Radio Rethink streaming app from the App Store. Our email address is kows@sonic.net. You can give us a like on Facebook at facebook.com/kows.fm. Also, let's hear.
KOWS Radio thanks Community Market of Sebastopol for their ongoing support. Community Market is a worker-run natural food store providing our community with organic food products since 1975. Located at the Barlow, 6762 Sebastopol Avenue in Sebastopol, you can reach them by phone at 707-407-4020.
KOWS is underwritten in part by Minnie Rivers Books and Tea. Minnie Rivers specializes in tools for spiritual practice, tea, and teaware. They are located at 130 South Main Street, Suite 101 in Sebastopol, and they can be found online at minnierriversbooks.com. They can also be reached by phone at 707-829-8871.
Salut, je suis un espadon. J'ai perdu mon téléphone par le champ de tournesol. Il devient un champignon, ainsi que des champignons. C'est inutile, c'est pas bon si tu as envie de.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. You are listening to The Mountain, an adoration in a multitude of parts, and I'm your host, Andrew Lewis. I'm super glad you can be here to join me and to join us in whatever strange fellowship this is in Radioland. I thought today maybe I'd begin this afternoon by just being a little real and maybe getting a little personal, because if it's not personal, then what is it? This morning, I came downstairs, and much as I often do, I made coffee and breakfast for my wife, and she came down, and she sat at the counter in our kitchen, and she looked broken, near about as broken as I've ever seen her. And the thing is that, by definition, her job, her vocation, is not to be broken, because she's a doctor, and her job, fundamentally, is to be there for other people and to help them and take care of them and their needs. And she looked to me and she said that it has been so hard, just so terribly hard, because near about every day, people come in all day long and they tell her, that they're exhausted, that they're depressed, that they're anxious, that they're sad, that something's not right in the world. And as she told me this, I thought of how strange it is that just in our daily lives, there's so much coming at us. There's death, there's birth, there's struggles of our children, there's those around us who struggle, there's illness that afflicts some, there's financial challenges, there's just the everything of daily living. And we don't need one more thing. It already is too much as it is. And yet, in this moment, we're living in a time where, for no reason at all, there's a person or a set of people that are just adding a whole bunch of extra things, just unneeded suffering to so many people in the world. People are being bombed. Oil prices are going through the roof. It's harder and harder to make ends meet. Countries no longer trust one another. Nations no longer trust one another. And it's all so unnecessary. And I thought, this isn't making America great again. It's just not making us great again. And I thought that this is the problem with kings, that there should be not so much power in the hands of one person. It's the problem with regencies. And that perhaps the true regent should be not just one person, but all people, all of us collectively, and the power that we collectively can bring to one another. And I guess that's a long way of getting around to tomorrow is No King's Day. And I encourage anybody to go and participate in whatever way you can. If not, at the very least, to say no kings, but perhaps to recognize another sort of regent, and that's us, all of us, even those with whom we might have disagreements, to recognize the regency that's inherent to that great body of people, to the collective, and the power that we can bring to the world and to solving the world's problems. So with that, welcome back to the mountain, an adoration in a multitude of parts. Thank you. Welcome back. This is Andrew Lewis, and you're listening to The Mountain, an adoration in a multitude of parts. Thanks for sticking it out this far. It's a long walk, perhaps longer than it was ever intended to be. And truthfully, I'm just as baffled as you might be with all this stuff. I never could understand why the Bible contained several books that were basically similar drafts of one another. It just doesn't seem like a very effective way to do anything. I mean, if I were God, I would have commissioned volumes that were completely different, each one containing different stories. And then, in their composite, they would tell the story in its entirety. Just saying. So why would the one on high have settled for three copies of basically the same story? Unless, of course, this is all that there was. Unless the birth of the Son of God did not actually leave much of an imprint on the historical record. And so the church, that great edifice intended to worship the most mighty being in the universe, had to make do with whatever remainders they could fish out of the resale bin. In the making of the Adoration Chapel, however, John didn't have much room in his head to ponder that. There was still lots of work to do. He was 6 months into the project, and he only now had finished the preparation of the panels. In those months, John had spent his evenings making elaborate prep drawings of each of the four figures representing the Gospels. They started as small sketches and then large, full-size preparation drawings on four-foot sheets. When they were finished, John photographed them and made slides of the sketches. One afternoon, John and Marcia rented a cargo van and transported the heavy finished panels to Trina Dixon's warehouse studio in Encinitas. There, they assembled the panels that would become the proscenium arch. In the dark, he projected the images of his sketches onto the panels. Over the course of that long night, John sketched in the outlines of the figures. He had to work fast because the van had to be returned the following morning. By dawn, exhausted, he had finished. Marcia and John drove the panels back to John's garage and returned the van and came home, and they lay down in the garage and together they went to sleep. The painting and filling in of each of the figures would take another month. As he washed in the muscles and cranium of the bowl of St. Luke, the figure emerged out of the patina. Its face had sentience, a knowing that seemed to be nested in a not knowing. Over his right horn, in the patina, could be seen the shadow of a sarcophagus.
Eggshell white, painting your head. Dirt beneath your nails and years on the back of your head. Some things can wash clean and some will stick around. Blades of St. Augustine scattered across the driveway. Feels like Sunday when I hear a Cajun band. Every chamber of my heart bears mark of what I come from. Sometimes our world falls apart, but I guess that's what it takes to find the part can I break. Table on a concrete slab. The fish are red and the crabs are blue. Every 5 gallon bucket carries a piece of you. Some things can't wash clean and somewhere else to grab. Spilled beer and a deck of cards, an old bed sheet for a tablecloth. Some of those days are lost, but most I still come across. Every chamber of my heart bears a mark of what I come from. Sometimes the world falls apart, but I guess that's what it takes to find the part I cannot break. I come from never giving up, I come from you. I built cities with sidewalk chalk and sailed the world in a cardboard boat. I hope I always dream that big. I put the whole damn kitchen in every pot of cola soup. Hope I always put everything I got into what I do. Some things can wash clean, and some will stick around. Every chamber of my heart bears a mark of what I come from. Sometimes our world falls apart, but I guess that's what it takes. Find the part that cannot break. We cannot break.
We don't know much about Luke. He was educated, his Greek was elevated, and he appears to have known a bit about church history. And he knew his geography. The accepted explanation for the assignation of the bowl is that his narrative begins with the story of Zechariah entering the temple to perform a sacrifice, and bowls were sometimes sacrificed. To me, it feels like a bit of a stretch. On the other hand, maybe it doesn't matter. All animals, all life, as consequences of God, have to be holy, and yet, though many creatures are sentient, they have awareness of the world, of others, of themselves in the world. They may not have any recognition of God or even a life force that they carry within. With the exception of us, perhaps, all other life is naive before that mystery. Do any other forms of life, ants, wasps, ostriches, humpback whales, have rituals of worship? Probably not. Why would the manifold of God's creation have no cognition of him, though? Which might suggest that God did not create us, but that instead he is solely of human creation. Because if he existed for all life, then would all life not have knowledge of him, and wouldn't they worship him as do we? And then, why would God sequester awareness of him in a vehicle as imperfect and so ill-conceived and with such limited cognitive capacities as ourselves? We are implicated in a world that is more vast than is within the capacity of any single person to understand it. There's so much out there, so much we just take for granted every day without any consideration of from where it comes. Why was I born in Mission Hills? Why was I called Andrew? Why was John who he was? Why even was he called John? And strangely, so many of the answers to those questions go back to a book which most of us have never read.
I watched him circle around the block, finally stopped at mine. Took a while before he knocked, like all he had was time.
Excuse me, ma'am, maybe you can help. The directions weren't so clear. I'm looking for Olivia's aunt. They said I might find her here. Well, I looked real hard and asked him what she's got he's looking for. Said there's something I think she'd want to know when I let him in the door. It's not like me to trust so quick, caught me by surprise. But something about him gave me there in his eyes. Just like that, your life can change. If I hadn't looked away, my boy might still be with me now. He'd be 25 today. No knife can carve away the stain. No drink can drown regret. They say Jesus brings you peace and grace. Well, he ain't found me yet. Sat down and took a deeper breath and looked right in my face. I heard about the son you lost, how you left without a trace. I spent years just trying to find you so I could finally let you know. It was your son's heart that saved me and a life you gave us both. Just like that, your life can change. Look what the angels send. I lay my head upon his chest, and I was with my boy again. Somehow grace has found me, and I had to let him in.
There once was a boy. I didn't know him then, during the time that we lived in San Diego. His name would be Luke. At the time of the crafting of the chapel, he hardly existed. he would exist mostly in a future time, in a time a few years after Anna and I had married, a time after we had moved to Vermont. In those years that lay in the future, we would live in a place called the Fielder Farm, a yellow hill farm built on an alluvial bench on a ridge line above a hollow. The Fielder Farm sat on 240 acres of meadow and woodland surrounded by 20,000 acres of state forest. We rented that yellow farmhouse for $700 a month. Anna was going to medical school at the University of Vermont, and I was doing something. I would be challenged to describe exactly what. It had something to do with telecom. In the autumn, the mountains around us would burnish with yellows and ambers and salmon red and gold, and as the temperatures chilled and the world put herself to sleep, the leaves would fall. Around our home, a palette of leaves colored the ground. One weekend, I invited Luke to our house. He was a 9-year-old boy. He lived down in the valley. His father, Andy, was a master woodworker who resembled a young Kurt Vonnegut. His mother, Annie, was a designer who worked with fabrics. Andy had built for them their home on a mountainside overlooking the valley. One afternoon, while erecting the house, they had gotten into an argument about the shape of complex curves. Andy was at the time constructing a roof, and he had ideas as a woodworker. But Annie, who worked with draping fabric, had a different, perhaps more tactile understanding of curves. In an attempt to prove his point, Andy chose to build a curved roof. But in the end, Annie was proven right. The roof took far too long to complete, and every single beam, every single joist, was of a different dimension. But on this autumn afternoon, I had told Luke that I would pay him to help us rake our leaves. That afternoon, his mother, Annie, dropped him off at our house. Luke was differently minded. He didn't quite have words, and his mind would run in circles, and he would say sentences, parts of sentences, again and again. His physical movements were not always directional or coherent. Together, he and I worked our way, raking the leaves up from the grassy meadow in front of the house. I would rake, and Luke would sometimes rake. But mostly he bobbed and he bounced up and down, dancing with the rake, talking about the camera, the Nikon, the camera that he was going to buy. It was a Nikon, a camera that he was going to buy. I let him dance, and I loaded recycling into the car, and then he and I raked together until we were tired. And while we raked, I carried my infant daughter in a pack on my back, a Nikon, a camera. It was a camera that he, Luke, was going to buy. Luke had his affections. He liked cameras. He liked to take pictures. He liked to collect. He collected things. He collected phones, rotary phones. You turn the rotor and the spinning disc would clickety-click, and it was a phone. His father also collected. Andy Palmer, he collected antique light bulbs. Andy, he mounted them on stringers that crisscrossed the rooms, and he had connected them to timers that would slowly release charge to the light bulb so that they would slowly come to light and would not explode. Andy loved the shades and timbers of the unique glows that each bulb cast. It was perhaps a year later. I was driving into Burlington to pick up Anna. My infant daughter sat in her car seat in the back of our Honda CRV. We had come down the Hollow Road and had turned north onto the road that wound through the Huntington Valley. I glanced in the rearview mirror and I saw my daughter, her lips and chin colored with a thick orange liquid. I realized in an instant that she had picked up and opened and drank an entire bottle of pediatric Tylenol. In the rearview mirror, she smiled and giggled. My heart, it raced. I hit the accelerator and raced forward and then hung a sharp left into the first driveway I saw. It was the Palmer house, the house where Luke lived. And I roared up the hill and I slammed the brakes and in an instant I had my baby in my arms and I bounded up the flight of steps to the porch and I pounded on the door. No one was home. No one came to the door. And so I opened the door and I ran in and I looked around that open room, the rafters, each a different length, strung with hundreds of light bulbs. I looked for the phone. I needed a phone. I needed to call 911. But there in front of me were dozens and dozens and dozens of rotary phones. They lined the counters and littered the tables and shelves. I stared at all the phones that Luke had collected, and with my dear daughter, my precious daughter, cradled in my arm, I moved down that line of phones, and I tried every line, and every phone was dead. My daughter would live, however, but we would eventually leave the Huntington Valley. A decade later, Luke would learn to drive. He was so proud. He could drive. He was allowed to drive. They gave him a license to drive. He could not have been more than 17, more than 18. He was working in a bakery. Luke, he wanted to bake. He wanted to be a baker. He would work in the bakery. Baking bread in the day, and bread he would bake, the grain, the bread he would bake. Luke was driving home from Richmond. Luke, he drove home. It was night, and the curve, and the turn. It was a turn, and the car, it rolled off the road on the Huntington Road. The car, it rolled over and over. It rolled in the night, and Luke died. The next day, Luke's father, Andy, he went to his shed, and there he took his finest hardwoods, the woods he had been saving, and in his workshop, he built for his son a coffin. That day he fashioned a place for his son for all eternity to sleep. I speak these words in a time that Luke would never live to see. That boy, that young man, is no more. He no longer is a future that will come to be. Instead, he is a past that once was and will never be again. And yet his words, the word, our words, are foundational. They're foundational to our being. And his words, the way he would use his words, they are now scored inside of me. They are in my being, so that even now, as I tell this, Luke's way of words is in my head. As for Andy and Ani, they could not stay in that place. They would make their way back to the Edie farm, Ani's ancestral home in Martha's Vineyard. They could no longer drive that road that had taken from them the most precious thing that they had. Why do I tell you this story? What does this story have to do with anything at all? Perhaps everything. Because if there was a God, for what would such a child be sacrificed? And who would need or want a God who possessed such cruelty as that? And yet without a God, without a reason, nothing can be recovered. There are things that we live, terrible things, from which we will never recover. And yet we have to go on. And forever after, we have no choice but to carry those stricken stories within us, perhaps hoping, just hoping, that in their telling, something beautiful or redemptive may come.
Tell you that I love you. I love you. But I can't think of right words to say. I long to tell you that I'm always thinking of you. I'm always thinking of you. But my words just blow away. Ends up to one thing, honey, and I can't think of right words to say. Wherever I am, girl, I'm always walking with you. I'm always walking with you, but I look and you're not there. And whoever I'm with, I'm always, always talking to you. I'm always talking to you, and I'm sad that you can't hear. Sad that you can't. It always ends up to one. Honey, when I look and you're not there. Around you, like sea around the shore. Each night and day I pray and hope that I might find you, and hope that I might find you, because hearts can do no more. Do it always ends up to one. Honey, still I kneel upon the floor. How can I tell you that I love you? can't think of right words to say. I long to tell you that I'm always thinking of you. I'm always thinking of you. It always ends up to one thing, honey, and I can't think of right words to say.
You are listening to The Mountain, an adoration in a multitude of parts. Today's songs include Death of the Phone Call, sung by Whatever Dad, a rich cover of Neil Young's Helpless, sung by the inimitable Katie Lang. I believe she was joined by Jane Sibbery, who was in town just last night. I Come From, by the duo Ordinary Elephant, Just Like That, sung by Bonnie Raitt, and How Can I Tell You by Yusuf Cat Stevens. We'll be closing out with Milk Heavy Pollenide by Laura Gibson. Many thanks, as always, to the Blue Dot Session for the background loop, The Telling. Are you looking for a new experience? A way to share your love of music? KOWS Radio is excited to announce our new Host with the Herd program. That's right, a $100 donation makes you eligible to join an experienced radio host live on air as a guest host. You'll have an hour to share music and, if you'd like, let our listeners know why the selections you made are meaningful to you. After the show, you'll receive a KOWS t-shirt, a recording of your show, a photo of you in the studio, and a certificate for your brag wall. Experience the excitement of broadcasting live over the airwaves. Email us today at kows@sonic.net to get started. And coming up on April 12th, songwriter, singer, producer, multi-instrumentalist, and longtime KOWS host David Rosen is joined by one of Southern California's finest jazz, blues, and standards vocalists, Karen Gallinger, for a benefit for Food for Thought. You can join them at Monterio's Curtain Call Theater on Friday, April 10th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, April 12th at 2 p.m. for some great music for a great cause. The Curtain Call Theater is located at 20347 Highway 116 in Monterio. There is limited seating and tickets will be available only at the door, 1/2 hour before the show. See you there. And also, it bears remembering that our time of need is our time to be. So, for those in our community in need of nutritious food, you are invited to the St. Philip Rural Food Distribution. They provide fresh local eggs, fresh produce, milk, cheeses, meats, and fish, bread, soups, and canned goods. Food distribution is held at the Occidental Parish Hall on the second Tuesday of the month from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. The next distribution will be on April 14th. Again, that will be on April 14th at the Occidental Parish Hall from 8:30 to 10:30 a.m. And as always, Ceres is seeking volunteers to aid in growing, cooking, and delivering meals to clients in Sonoma County who are facing serious health challenges. The Ceres Community Project empowers young people as volunteer gardeners and chefs, educating the broader community about the connections between food choices and individual health, the community, and the planet. They partner with healthcare providers and insurers to demonstrate the impact of medically tailored meals to ensure that nutrition is a routine part of healthcare. Shifts are available Monday to Friday in Sebastopol. Visit ceresproject.org. That's C-E-R-E-S project.org. One word. And also it bears remembering that our time of need is our time to be. So for those thank you so much for taking the time to be here. If you're interested in following the mountain, you can go to the Mountain Substack. Just Google A Mountain, An Adoration in a Multitude of Parts. If you would like to listen to back episodes, you can go to the Mountain page on Substack, or you can listen to the podcast version on Spotify. Again, just search for The Mountain, An Adoration in a Multitude of Parts. By all means, if you appreciate the listen, and it makes your world a little bigger, I would be grateful and indebted if you would share with your friends. Please have a great day or a good night, wherever you are.
Stumbling back to you, and you'll say, don't you ever lose your heat, don't you ever be caught shedding your skin too soon.
Bye, little baby.
question formed upon still lips was passed on but never asked. Yes, I believe that there's a point to what we do. But I ask myself, is there something
This is KOWSLP Occidental 92.5, serving Santa Rosa and West Sonoma County for 18 years, streaming to the world at KOWSFM.com from our studios in Santa Rosa. Visit our website to listen, donate, or volunteer. You can also download the Radio Rethink streaming app from the App Store. Our email address is KOWS@sonic.net. You can also give us a like on Facebook at facebook.com/KOWS.FM. And you have been listening to The Mountain, an Adoration in a Multitude of Parts with your host, Andrew Lewis. This is a streaming, serialized, multi-part story. If you want to catch up on previous episodes, you can go to the KOWS website and look at archive shows, or you can go to the Mountain and Adoration Substack and find links there as well. Hope you're well, and hope
it's 2 o'clock.
You're tuned in to KOWS LP Occidental, member-supported community radio for West Sonoma County, broadcasting at 92.